This is the Unstoppable Authors Podcast with worldbuilding warrior Angeline Trevina,
planning and productivity powerhouse Holly Line,
and formatting fireball Julia Scott.
Every week we bring you discussions on the craft of writing,
author life and business,
and interviews with some of the industry's most unstoppable authors.
A writer's life doesn't have to be solitary. We're here to bust that myth, support you on your journey, and encourage you to be unstoppable. Welcome to episode 178 of the Unstoppable Authors Podcast. I'm your host, Holly Line, and today I am talking to returning guest Sasha Black about the launch of her new pen name, Ruby Rowe, and everything she learned from that experience. First of all, it's personal update time. So since last week, things have just been ticking over, really. I mentioned last time that I needed to run something past my coach, which I did, and she helped me to come up with some techniques to get my focus to kick in and stay happy, while also keeping my strengths that crave new and different happy as well. It's a delicate balance. I completed a read-through of what I had already written of The Shifters of London, Book 1, and I've decided to start from scratch. But I will be able to use a lot of what I had written previously, which was only about 22,000 words, and all words count as practice, so none of it's wasted, but it was still a difficult decision to come to. But it's a valuable lesson in resilience and the ability to pivot. So this weekend I'm doing some writing sprints with Shane and Julia to get off the ground with this book again. So look at me, using the tools that I know work for me. Okay, we have no new patrons this week, but a huge thank you to all of our current patrons who sponsor the show. We appreciate all of your support so very much. Patrons get early access to episodes, exclusive access to our off-air banter, and of course the warm, fuzzy feeling of supporting the show. You can do so for just £3 a month at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. Once again, we are running our monthly session of Sprints and Giggles for all of our listeners. It's an evening on which we do writing sprints, answer questions, and have a laugh. This month, that will be happening on Wednesday the 22nd of March at 8 p.m. UK time. Be sure to check your local time zone, because some countries will have switched to daylight savings by then, but the UK won't have done, so normal time differences may not apply. If you'd like to join in, you just need to be subscribed to our newsletter or be a member of our Facebook group, so check out the show notes for those links. And now onto the interview with Sasha Black. Sasha Black is a best-selling and competition-winning author, rebel podcaster, and professional speaker. She has five obsessions: words, expensive shoes, conspiracy theories, self-improvement, and breaking the rules. Sasha writes educational non-fiction books for writers and sapphic books for young adults. She also writes under a super secret pen name, although we're about to bust that shit right open. When she's not writing, she can be found laughing inappropriately loud, sniffing musty old books, and fangirling film and TV soundtracks, or thinking up new ways to break the rules. She lives in Cambridgeshire, England, with her wife and a genius giant of a son. So with me today is Sasha Black. Hello and welcome back to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's all right. Would you like to introduce yourself and your new persona, Ruby Rowe?
Yeah, so as Sasha, I write non-fiction writing craft books and occasionally some young adult stuff. I'm also the host of the Rebel Author Podcast. And as Ruby Rowe, I write sapphic fantasy romance that is very spicy. And I mostly hang out on TikTok. So I think that's probably it. And I've just released a Game of Hearts and Heists, which is the first one in the series, and A Game of Romance and Ruin will be out hopefully before summer.
Awesome. Okay, so we've had you on the show a couple of times before, and I want to cover fresh ground today. So we're going to talk about Ruby. So what prompted you to create a pen name?
So the This has been a long journey, and I started reading sapphic fiction and I was reading young adult fiction, and I got to a certain point in the reading where I fell into a big slump and I knew something was missing, but I wasn't entirely sure what it was. And then for whatever serendipitous reason, I stumbled across some very spicy sapphic adult books. Started reading those and was like, okay, this smut basically is what is missing from my life. And from that point on, I was like, I don't know if I can write smut. I don't know if I can write romance, even though the young adult stuff, now I look back in hindsight, having learned loads, I was writing romantic fantasy anyway, but as young adult. Mm. And so because I wasn't sure, and because it's queer and I'm a queer woman, I needed privacy to write the first book because I just wasn't sure. It was totally new. It's scary when you write something new. And I just needed, I'm not like some of the massive indies out there, but I have enough of an audience and I wear my blackened heart on my sleeve, if you like. So there's very little I don't tell people. Mm. And so I just needed that privacy to explore and see whether or not I could even do it and whether or not I could create something that I was proud of. Mm. And so, yeah, like that's basically what happened. And then I got to the end. So I suppose that is why I created it. And I think the other thing, was self-judgment, because the only person really that I was afraid of judging or afraid of not making proud was myself. Mm. So actually, you know, I got through that, and yeah, then all different things happened.
Yeah, so what made you decide to go public with the
pain? Yeah. Well, actually, sorry. I think that's one other thing. The other thing was I actually wanted to see if I could start again, because lots of authors talk about how, you know, it's too late. You can't start again. You can't be new in 2023 or whatever. And it's actually nonsense. You can always start again. And I have proved that. So that was another reason, like, just popped into my head of why I did it. So the reason that I decided to go public is that I didn't realize that I'm very precious about the creation bit. So the drafting and the editing, I don't want anybody looking over my shoulder. I don't want, dozens of bits of beta feedback. I want one opinion and that's it. Mm-hmm. And so I need that secrecy and privacy to create. But once I had finished creating and once I'd shipped the book off to the editor, there's a mental disconnect for me when the book becomes not a piece of art anymore, but it's a product. Mm. And it's almost like a physical change in my brain. It's a complete mindset shift. And all of a sudden, I didn't want to hide anymore. I am still really proud of what that book is. Mm. And I had so much fun with it that I just wanted, it was like a light switch. I just immediately flicked on and wanted to tell everybody about it because I was so excited by what I'd created. And I really felt at that point that staying secret would actually hinder my ability to market, because so much of my platform, regardless of the pen name, is about me and my voice and the brand of whatever that name is, right? Ruby Rowe is going to be a brand. Sasha Black is a brand. Mm. And in order to keep that secret, I wouldn't have been able to use my face and I wouldn't have been able to use my voice, because enough people listen to the podcast who also read would have been able to work it out. And so at that point, I was like, actually, I can't keep this secret. Not using the business and marketing models that I enjoy. Mm. And that's the difference. I could have done it and I could have, you know, gone whole hog on ads or whole hog on just write release, but that I wouldn't have found that enjoyable. I like TikTok. I like using my voice. Mm. So yeah.
Mm. Okay. So what was special about how you wrote this book? You said about being, it was a secret thing. Is that different from how you normally write or how you've written in the past?
I think it's fairly different because, like I say, having a podcast, it's actually really hard to hide things because once you've podcasted for a while, if you do any kind of intro, then you do just blather on about whatever stuff you're doing. And so it is different. Usually, you know, I've already started talking about the fact that, you know, I'm writing The Villain's Journey. That's the next nonfiction I'm doing. Whereas, you know, it was very, very secret. Other things that were different about this is I wrote the book in order, which I've never done before. I usually write out of order, but I was using a new outline. So I was using Plots for Authors, mm-hmm. And using their trope outlines, because it's an enemies to lovers story. And that revolutionized everything, because even though I paid a lot of money for the outline, I got the outline, I looked at it, I kind of overlaid my story on it, and then I just ignored it. So like, in one way, it was really, really helpful. But the other thing I found is that writing tropes is really intuitive. Mm. If you understand the innate stake of that trope, mm-hmm. if you understand the innate conflict, then for me personally as an author, it becomes very intuitive to overlay story arc and story structure on that.
Mm-hmm.
So those were both new things. I'd never written, obviously you put tropes or mini, like micro tropes into your stories anyway, universal fantasy, whatever you want to call it. But I hadn't written a pure trope book. So the other thing is I wrote it in 3 weeks.
Yeah,
which
you
is
did.
Very different. Yeah. Literally still can't believe that. And I wrote it using owrite.co if anyone's interested. So I went into the sprint room, and it's a web room where you can see everybody's word counts, but you can't see what they're writing. And as somebody who has Achiever, the black stars and gold stars are like dopamine crack to me. And then seeing other people's word counts as somebody who's high competition is extremely motivating. Those are all things that I did that were different. And I will definitely continue to do those things because, wow, the output is different.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I just want to dive into the trope thing a little bit there, because it might be really helpful for our listeners to look at that in a bit more detail. So the enemies to lovers trope, how did you use that then to structure the whole story?
So the outline comes with like chapter by chapter, so it comes as 20 chapters, is that what you mean? Mm. And then it literally tells you they meet here, they don't like each other, or they don't, you know, in Fake Dating, one of the lines is like they refuse to date, one of them refuses to date, one brings the proposal, the other one refuses to date. And so like each chapter has like two sentences explanation of what you need to do in order to hit the beats of that story structure. So yeah, I do highly recommend it. It's not cheap. It's like $400-$500 for the outlines, and I think you get 10 per pack if you go for the romance ones, but I mean it will shortcut your process, trust me. if you use outlines,
yeah,
right? If you don't find outlines helpful, it's not going to help you. And of course they are not giving you your story outline, right? They are just giving you a basic, this is how you write Fake Dating, or this is how you write enemies to lovers. Mm-hmm. You then have to input your individual events, your individual characters, and things like that. So for example, the one the enemies to lovers that I got, I think they meet on page and develop the enemy and then become lovers, and that's not how I wrote my book. I wrote my book, they are enemies before the story starts, so they've already met, so they've got history. But that was an intentional choice. But yeah, I mean, it was extremely useful.
Yeah, it's a template basically.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, all right. So I happen to know that you really leaned into your strengths with this book, so everybody drink. Can you tell us how you used your strengths to write the book?
So, in every single shape, way, or form possible. So enemies to lovers itself is okay. For me, it's about framing, because anybody can write any trope. It's about finding a way to frame that trope so that you understand it in your like world lens or your worldview. For somebody who is top number one competition, I understand the world in survival of the fittest, like competition. That is how my brain works. It's all about the win. So for me, then, enemies to lovers becomes a competition. Who wins the heart first, right? Who's that's what romance is. It's romance is a competition to win somebody's heart. And when I framed it like that, it became so unbelievably easy to write that I didn't even have to think. I could just vomit the whole plot onto the page. But like I say, there were other things I did, like sprint writing. That made a difference. Writing in a room where I could see other people's word counts, as somebody who is high achiever and who is high competition, that makes a difference. Other things, like I have high focus, so like using a focus cue. So I would light a candle every time I would start to write. And that was like a trigger for my brain to say, okay, now we focus. Mm-hmm. And so the focus tunnel would then like kick in. A couple of other things, the characters that I actually used strengths to create the characters themselves. Mm-hmm. And so the way that I did that, and here's the interesting thing, I did it for all of the characters. So there's a big team because there's a heist, and because the side characters only get so much page time, and some of them got more page time than others, which was intentional because of how I'm creating the series. Mm-hmm. I have had to slightly change and tweak the strengths for some of the side characters as I've gone through, because then I've come to like their story and it doesn't quite work. Mm-hmm. They've changed and evolved as I've written. So anyway, the point is, I looked at what their strengths were before I started. One of the things that I was really clear on coming into this series is that this series is about female rage. and so I wanted every single woman in this series to be cross, angry about something, and like for anger to be positive, right? Anger as an emotion gets slated by most people think it's really detrimental, and I actually think anger is really empowering, and a really if you angle it and use it as fuel for positive action, it can be extremely generative and positive, and that's what I'm trying to champion. So I knew both women's strengths, and they are both yellow dominant women, which is why lots of people are like, oh, you know, self insert or whatever. And I'm like, no, Becca Stein's read it. She told me that it wasn't a self insert. So there we go. I've got proof. Anyway, so it's not, but what I did was use my knowledge of strengths to know how the characters would wind each other up.
Mm-hmm.
How they would support each other and how they would become a team, because romance is all about that joining and union, right? But at the start, there's always friction. So it was very easy when you know and understand strengths, and particularly my strengths. I did give them a couple each because I wanted that friction and I wanted to wind them up.
Yeah, that's cool. I've been trying to do that with what I've been writing recently, and just feeling like, I don't know, how does this help me? So that's very helpful. Thank you.
Well, it's like, if you look at the basements and you look at the balconies and you're like, okay, what are the strengths that are polar opposites to each other? So you've got like adaptability and discipline, like on a very shallow surface level, you can see how those two would cause friction, where one person might want a structure and an order. The other person just wants to live in the moment and see where we go. And then even like when you look at one strength, you can even find friction inside it. So with competition, like what are the different ways that competition plays out? What is, you know, how one person reacts to wanting to win, or like how does your opinion of what you want to win change, right? Because ultimately she thinks she wants to win something, and actually it's something else that she wants. She wants to win the heart, right? Ultimately that's what happens. And what are you willing to do to win? Like, how far are you willing to go? And Yeah, so I just think if you look into the strength, there are different ways that you can like push pull against things that you know that will wind you up, like being accused of being a cheater or whatever, you know, right? That's not going to go down very well because high competition people don't cheat. So, you know, there are ways of finding things that would annoy somebody's strengths.
Yeah. Okay. So what research did you do for the book itself or for the market that you were writing for?
So much research. I spent months reading. That's the first thing I did. So I read both sapphic books in general and then fantasy romance books. And then there aren't many sapphic fantasy romance books, but I tried to find as many as I could. I read Caelitics reports. So those are by Alex Newton and they dive into a lot of detail on all kinds of things from which authors are selling, tropes, keywords, pricing, all kinds of stuff. I also spent a considerable amount of time on Amazon only this time because I was writing for KU. I literally designed it for KU, which meant I spent a long time reading KU books as well. Mm-hmm. And there are differences, particularly around pacing. So I mean, there are short KU books and there are long KU books, but, you know, I did go in and deconstruct a lot of what was selling in KU. Mm-hmm. I spent time looking at that over several months as well, not just like I didn't just go on one day and see, you know, this was like me looking for days and weeks. Mm. So then I did things like picking out common tropes. So, for example, I know that in the sapphic arena, the most popular tropes are actually age gap and ice queen. It's not enemies to lovers, but in fantasy romance, that is the most popular trope. Enemies to lovers is the most popular trope. And so it was then a choice of like, how do you position the book? Do you position the book for the sapphic market or do you position it for fantasy romance? And fantasy romance is the bigger market. So the cover is slanted towards fantasy romance. The tropes are slanted, I would say, slightly more towards fantasy romance. But the smut and the queerness is all for the sapphic readers. And so what I was trying to do was plug a hole in the market because there aren't books that do that. Mm. And so, yeah, I looked at all kinds of stuff from book length, style of writing, pace, tropes I've mentioned, even like brand colours. And then I looked at what authors were doing as well. Where were they marketing? How were they advertising? Were they on TikTok? Were they on Facebook? All that kind of stuff. So it was like this massive, really ridiculously comprehensive deep dive. And also it was an excuse to buy loads of books.
Loads of books with lesbians.
Yeah. Yeah, some straight ones.
Okay, so how did you go about creating a new brand for yourself around Ruby?
So I worked with my sister on some of the more basic things like colour palettes. She did all of that. She chose it all for me. I kind of gave her like, I want it to be sexy and like smutty and sarcastic and very gay. So I worked with her on that. And she also did my logo as well. She like, because she used to do graphic design and things. And then like, apart from that, I very intentionally chose to keep it simple and minimum viable. So I have got an MVP website. It is not fancy. There is not a lot of stuff on there, but it works. It's functional and it has a newsletter sign up. The only two things that I set up in terms of business infrastructure were the mailing list and the website. And then in terms of social media, while I claimed my Instagram profile, I have one post on there that directs people to my Sasha profile on Instagram because I'm not managing 17,000 different social medias and providing content for them all. Mm-hmm. And so I picked TikTok. One, because TikTok is still working. It is still an area that you can generate sales from. And I've got the data to back it up for me because obviously your mileage may vary. but it's also queer friendly. Of all of the platforms, it's probably the most queer friendly place, and it's also extremely friendly for anything spicy. So because it's queer friendly and because it's got a big spicy fan base, I knew that that was the only place that I could go, really. So yeah, I picked TikTok and I started in January, so just over a month before I launched, which probably wasn't far enough away, but because it was a February launch, I wasn't going to be starting in December because nobody pays any attention to anything in December. Mm-hmm. So that might be something that I would, if I were to do it again, I might not launch in February so that I could have a longer run up on TikTok. But anyway, so I posted once a day for the whole of January. I got over 1,000 followers, which was the goal, because I wanted the link out. Mm-hmm. And then closer to launch, I you know, like just threw content out like several times a day, trying to drive up the sales. So yeah.
Okay. So what was the most enjoyable thing about producing and promoting this book?
Well, writing it, I literally had so fucking much fun writing it. And like, it's really interesting writing book two, because am I allowed to say naughty words?
One or two.
Okay. So I fudged book two the first time. I wrote 30K in January and I realized I'd done what I did with my first series, which was to overcomplicate it. So I stripped everything out and went back. And now I'm writing it this time. It's coming so much easier, which was making it more fun. But also I'm trying to just like get a quick and dirty draft out so that I can go back and go, okay, where can I put more fun in? How can I make it more smutty? How can I make it, you know, all of these things. And like, there is nothing more fun than being able to say that, like in your day job, like, how can I make this chapter dirtier? You know, like, that's just so much fun. Well, it is for me anyway. So yeah, like, I think the writing was the most fun thing. And that was the whole point of this journey, is that I left my day job to live the dream, and I turned the dream into a day job. And so I needed to go back and find the joy and find the fun. And it's changed everything. So yeah. And the other thing that I really loved was using tropes, because it made the marketing so much easier. Like, I still to this day can't really tell you what my first series is about. I can, it's about fate and destiny, but I can't give you like a log line pitch.
Yeah.
And tropes enable you to do that. Like, it's an enemies to lovers heist between two women, like two very stabby, very horny women. you know exactly what you're about to get, right?
Like, yeah.
And that's the thing, that, you know, people slate tropes quite a lot. And I'm like, actually, it makes your life so much easier, because you're not having to create, I don't know. You still have to create loads. Like, it's a whole new world and magic system. But it makes my life easier, because there's an innate structure that I know how to follow. So yeah, and that made it fun, because it you know, I wasn't struggling my way through writing it. So yeah, and then it made the marketing fun too.
For those of us who are less inclined to plot and follow structures assigned to us by somebody else, what is that still possible if you are writing just intuitively and not deliberately picking a specific trope to go after?
Is what still possible?
To have that that ease of marketing, I guess, and that
I'm sure it is. I can't tell you how, because I didn't manage to do it successfully for my first series. I think if you don't outline, look, I mean, here's the thing. I say I outline. I looked at the plot outline and I wrote 20 post-its. That's it. This is not like I had 5,000 words of outline, okay? Sure. I had some post-its. I mean, sure, people will still say that that's outlining, and okay, fine. But I mean, you know, then I don't look at the post-its. I just go write the story. So I do feel like a lot of what I do is writing intuitively. But if you know they are enemies and they're going to be lovers, that is a very clear arc. I think if you're going to not outline at all, you need to know what you're, by the time you get to the end, you need You need to know what the story is about. You need to have something clear that you can hang it on. Yeah. You know, it's a, whether that is Save the Cat and it's a bromance novel, or it's a, you know, Genie in a Bottle or whatever, unless you can point to a thing and say it's, even if you did like it's Ocean's 8 meets Six of Crows, you know, you've got to be able to point to something recognizable. A bit like metaphors and similes are there to make the difficult, intangible things in life tangible and understandable to readers. That is the purpose of like description in that way. If you have got a complex novel, you need to be able to point to something simple and say, this is what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And that's not a blurb. That's not a synopsis. That is a 1-2 punch, you know, very common, popular, understandable thing. So sure, there are loads of different ways that you can do that. It doesn't have to be, it's this trope and this trope. It's just that I have found an affinity for tropes in doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. It's all about that, isn't it? About finding what works for you and what's going to make it most fun for you and the most like accessible. Like the things that some of us find hard, how can we make those more accessible for ourselves?
Right. And so literally just before I came on here, there was a discussion in the Rebel Slack group about the Enneagram versus strengths. And I don't really get the Enneagram. I can't wait. I'm going to speak to Claire Taylor next week and I'm going to be like, I don't get it. Tell me, convince me, which is like the most challenger 8 thing I can do, which is super ironic. But the point is, strengths is now my frame for understanding the world, which is why I applied strengths to my characters.
Yeah.
If strengths doesn't work for you, don't use that as your frame, right? You've got to, and this is the point, right? I failed to find frames to make books before, and it's only that I've experimented enough to find the framing that works. And even, you know, even using, I'm even using strengths in a way in the marketing, or I'm, you know, I'm using like, you know, emotional words or whatever. The point is, tropes work as a framing mechanism for me for understanding marketing and for understanding what readers want in fiction. Yeah. But if it doesn't work for you, maybe it's a different type of outline, or maybe it's a different type of marketing terminology. But there is a terminology out there, because it semantics matters. That's why strengths is so powerful, because the coaches use the words that we understand and we use innately to talk to us. They talk to us in our language, and that's what you need to do with a reader, is talk to them in their language.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, so we talked about the most enjoyable thing, writing the book. What's the most effective thing that you did?
Two things. I got the reader magnets right this time and TikTok. So the reader magnets, the first thing I did was write 2 reader magnets this time. And I thought the first one I did was follow, and it's really interesting because I followed both the fantasy and the romance line. So my warm reader magnet for people who get to the end of the book is a romance reader magnet. It's a bonus epilogue that's, well, I'm calling it a smutalogue. So it's basically like an extra epilogue with a whole heap of smut in it. And I knew that that would work because romance writers often write a bonus like romance epilogue. And then I used a prequel for cold readers, so people who haven't read the book. And I'm using that at the moment in a sapphic kind of mailing list builder. And already that's been very effective. But I know it's working because one, I didn't even use one for a long time with my young adult series. But two, I did a giveaway, a free run last year, where I gave away, like, I don't know, I think it, I can't remember now. 17,000 has come into my head, but it might not have been quite that much. It might have been 15,000 copies. I got virtually no signups. right? That tells you that either people didn't read it, they did read it and didn't want to sign up because the offer wasn't good enough or wasn't the right offer, or for whatever reason, it just hasn't worked. Since I launched the book, I've done about 1,000 copies already, and I've had over 200 signups. That is an extremely high conversion rate. Like, yeah. That is mad, insane conversion rate. Like, okay, these are not big numbers. It's 1,000 copies and 200 subscribers, but that's 200 organic subscribers, right? We don't get that level of, you know, or it's like 1% signups or something, isn't it? I don't know what it is, but it's low. So that tells me I got that right. It was exactly the right kind of reader magnet. And it also tells me that you don't have to write a whole book to give away a whole book on your mailing list. It can just be a chapter or a story. But the point is you have to know your readers and know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And then deliver that. And the only way to know that is to fail and try and fail, and then you get it right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. The second thing that I did right was TikTok. TikTok, oh my goodness me. TikTok drive. TikTok is a whole different audience. These are paperback buyers, and this is an opportunity for writers to access paperback readers. Indie authors don't have a mechanism for doing that. Like, are there KU readers on TikTok and ebook readers? Yes, 100%. I did, funnily enough, I asked how people read on TikTok, and that would just happen to be one of the videos that I had like 10,000 views on or whatever, and there's about 300 comments on there. So, okay, it's not necessarily statistically representative of the whole of TikTok, but there was a good number of comments on
there. Yeah.
One thing that I can tell you is that as a nonfiction author, about 30% of my sales are paper-based.
Mm-hmm.
But for my fiction, any indie author will tell you it's less than 5%. For most people, it's less than like 1%. Okay. Mm-hmm. On launch day, 58% of my sales were paperbacks or hardback. 58%. What? Yeah. Like, and you know, and I think I went over 300. So there were 200 paper. There were 69 hardbacks and whatever the other number is to make it up to 200 paperbacks via Ingram Spark. And then I think I did like another 60 or something on Amazon once the paperback released on Amazon. I can't remember quite the exact numbers, but the math was 58% in the first 24 hours. I mean, that's unheard of. Now, of course, because it's in KU, the percentages are changing. So I'm about 30% now in the overall KU reads, or KU units, I should say, like full reads. And of course, you're going to expect that because it's in KU and it's going over time now. But the point is, I am still selling paperbacks at a rate that is considerably higher than anything I've ever experienced and anything that the majority of indie authors not using TikTok don't see. Mm. And I don't think it's cannibalizing any sales. Like, these are actually people who we are just not accessing because I'm still getting page reads and I'm still getting ebook sales.
Mm.
You know, and so my Amazon ads are kind of doing the KU audience and the ebook sales, and the TikTok is driving the paperback. So this is like happy bloody Larry, you know. So I think that was probably the best choice I ever, but the best strategic choice I've made.
I do wonder if it's platform specific or genre specific though. I don't know. I mean, I don't have the data to know, but my gut instinct is that fantasy romance probably does quite well in paperback generally.
You say that, but the majority of fantasy romance writers just spend a bucket load of money on advertising, and they're all, a lot of them are in KU. It's like 70% or whatever. I mean, to be fair, the next Kalytics report is due out, but it was like 70% are in KU. And that tells you that indies are spending the money because that's where the audience they found is. I genuinely think there is an untapped resource. I do think you have a point about genre, because I think fantasy as a whole, they like pretty things. I think fantasy romance readers in particular like pretty things, but I don't think that that's the only reason. I think TikTok is video based and visual based, and therefore they want to hold something up in the video. And that therefore generates a lot of physical sales because they want to hold the book up in the video. The other thing I did make the intentional choice to have under the cover art so that it was a pretty book.
Yeah.
In order to encourage sales. And I don't think I've sold 69 hardbacks of anything else.
Yeah. All right. So did you make any mistakes or regret any choices?
My two regrets are that I ran out of time to build a mailing list. Like, I really wanted to build the mailing list before I started. But actually, I think in a way, this is probably the best choice because I know that the people signing up now are super organic. And therefore, they're super engaged, or I hope they are. Like, you would think that they are. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a regret. It's an observation that I might plan for more time. Like, one of the two things that took the most time were the website and the mailing list set up, you know, because I did write two reader magnets, and that was, you know, 20K between them. That's an extra 20K you've got to find, as well as the fact you need to make them full and comprehensive stories. But I'm going off on one now. Anyway, I ran out of time. I should have possibly left more time between putting the book up for pre-order and it going. And I think that is a lesson that's combined with what I was saying before about the February release. But also, I wanted it out for Valentine's Day. So, you know, and then the other thing is I am skeptical about book tours. I did pay out for a book tour and I'm skeptical, and I think I'll leave it there. I wanted to do it. Like, I did get quite a few follows, but I think because the book tour was predominantly Instagram based and I'm predominantly keeping Sasha Black, that didn't help things. But also, I'm just gonna say it, because so I printed books to send books because my intention was to send physical copies out. I did end up sending I think five or six copies out. I've only seen one of them go up on a video anywhere. I've seen more that people have purchased themselves go up on videos. I don't even know if the ones that I sent are right. Actually, that's not true. I saw one person unbox one other person, so that's two of the six. Nobody else has commented, nobody else has mentioned it, and none of them went up in the tour photos. So they were all digital photos, which were lovely, but they're not, when you look at book tours with physical books in them, it's a different caliber of photo. And so I don't know whether or not I can actually use any of the photos as like addition, you know, because that's one of the things you do. You pay a lot of money for these tours in order to be able to use the comments, the reviews, the images that you get, or so that you can repost them. So if I were to do it again, I would make doubly sure there was more time. Like, we also had the Royal Mail scandals, which that was what stopped me sending the books out in the end. But I don't think I would do a digital book review tour again, because it just doesn't create the hype and vibe really that I was after. So that was a lesson learned.
So aside from Royal Mail, were there any other barriers that you encountered in your marketing efforts?
I think only the thing that I said, which was that everything took about 75 times longer than I anticipated. And I think, I don't know, in one way, I'm really pleased that I didn't give myself any more time, because I could still be messing around now with launch stuff, right? And because I condensed it into such a short space of time, I only had the time that I had. But the things that took the biggest brain power were the autoresponder sequence. I was so resistant to doing it. Setting up the website and, you know, integrating like book funnel, with MailerLite, with the website and all the rest of it. So yeah, those were probably the biggest issues, I think.
Yeah. So what's the biggest lesson that you learned from this launch?
Write for joy. I think, like, you know, nobody comes to writing for the money. If you come to writing for the money, you're either deluded or, you know, you're an oracle, because even if you make lots of educated guesses and do what I did, which was a very strategic stab at the market, there is no guarantee. I haven't created mortgage money here. You know, I have earned quite a lot of money in a very short space of time, but it's not mortgage money, you know. And lots of people are like, oh, well, that's a failure because it, you know, it wasn't mortgage money, or you weren't in the top 100. And I'm like, oh no, because that's not what I was doing. I'm setting up a sustainable fiction base, right? Like, if I have 10 books all ranking between 5,000 and 8,000, I'm going to be making good money.
Yeah.
You know, so this was never for me about a run at the top 1,000 or the top 100 or anything about like that. This was me setting up a sustainable fiction pen name, writing in a genre that gives me joy, because I tell you, that is what I came to this industry for, was fun, because I was sick of my corporate job. So, you know, I think a lot of us get very caught up in what we think we should be doing as indie authors, or what we're told the business is, or we're all told to write to market, and we're not all cut out to do that. Not all should be doing that, because not all of us enjoy that. You know, or you should be writing epic fantasy, or you shouldn't, like, romance isn't, you know, this, that, and the other. Everybody's got a bloody opinion. And it just actually doesn't matter. The only opinion that matters is yours. Like, what gives you joy? What lights your fire? Because I tell you what, you can find a way to make money out of that. There is a way to make money out of it. Everybody, Alex Newton himself told me not to do this. I've got an email where he's like, I wouldn't do this, and I still did it, and I've still made enough money for me to go, yeah, this was the right choice. So, like, this is the thing. Like, you can deliver exactly what the market wants and still not make money. Mm-hmm. But if you go in and you go in with the mindset of, this is not about one book, this is about 50 books or a career of books.
Yeah.
You know, and I do think that we need to stick for longer in one lane. And, you know, so I am now staying here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I need enough books that I have a backlist, because otherwise, if I keep hopping, I'm not going to necessarily be able to pull all of those readers through. And that is the way that you create a sustainable business. You have to create your own ecosystem, which means you need enough product to do that. So I think the lessons that I have learned, one is that you can make money with the things that bring you joy. And two is that sometimes, activator, you have to wait a little while.
Hold your horses.
And you know, like, this is great, but I need to do this at least like 15 times before I, you know, have a good enough backlist to be making a ton of money. I don't know. That's what I think.
And did anything surprise you about the launch?
Everything. Like, literally, I set 33 pre-orders as my pre-order goal, and I ended up with, I don't even know, I think the final numbers were like 200 paperbacks and 184 ebooks or something. So it was a lot of books in the end. And that shocked the hell out of me. I did not expect that. The TikTok response was also incredible. Like, I didn't expect to be able to start on TikTok, because this is the thing. So many of us in this industry are so far forward looking that we think things are dead before they're actually dead. So we then don't give things a go, and we're like, oh no, can't start again, can't do this, can't do that. Well, actually you can. So you probably should. So yeah, so, and then the other thing that surprised me was the number of paperbacks.
Yeah, that surprised me. When I heard you talking about that, I was like, that's stunning, actually.
It was stunning. Yeah. It really was. It was very shocking.
Yeah. It's interesting for me because I'm a paperback reader. And so I write for that. I am a paper first reader myself. And so I always make my paperbacks look really nice. And that's what I want to see, like bookstagrammers with physical copies of my books. And so, yeah, so
But are you marketing to the paperback readers?
This is the thing. You're giving me TikTok FOMO, and I'm quite firmly in the no thank you to TikTok camp. But now I'm getting like, that's where they are. I should go there.
Oh, well, man. You know, there are also a ton of paperback readers on Instagram because of all the bookstagrammers, right? It started on Instagram and then it went to TikTok.
Yeah.
The difference is TikTok is still new enough that you can get enough algo juice to build an audience very quickly. Like, how many years have I been on Instagram? What, like, probably since I started publishing in, even beforehand. So maybe 2014, 2015. So however many years that is, I still don't have 4,000 followers on Instagram. In just over 3 weeks, I generated 1,000 followers on TikTok. There is still juice to be had on TikTok. You know, I think it has. So once you hit 1,000, it does seem to slow down. You know, I think I'm on maybe 1,400 now. So I, you know, I went from 1,000 in 3 weeks to like 400 in 4 weeks. But still, you can't gain that many like Instagram followers unless you have a strategic plan and you are pumping content out and you are generating community and you're applying to comments and you're this and that. And, you know, it is considerably easier to find audience on TikTok if you deliver content that is relevant, wanted, and meets the kind of culture on there, because it is different to Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So where can our listeners find out more about you and Ruby Rowe?
Okay, so as Sasha Black, the website is sashablack.co.uk or on Instagram. And then you can find Ruby at rubyrowe.co.uk, and it's R-O-E, or on TikTok, which is at Ruby Rowe author.
Fabulous. Okay, as you may remember, we always like to finish things off with a would you rather question. And I have to give credit to Shane for this one.
Oh, no.
You're going to hate this. Would you rather? I don't know if I can ask. Yes, I can. Yes, again. Lose a competition or not have any significance to your audience?
What does that mean, not have any significance to your audience?
You're not significant to them, like they don't care about you.
He's a massive bastard. Wow. I think... what's the competition? Depends what the competition is.
We're not giving you any specifics.
I don't know how to answer that, because it would depend on the competition. If the competition was like, if it was New York Times number one versus like, and that was the competition, you got to New York Times number one versus not having an audience in order to create a sustainable income, then I'd choose the audience because I want the sustainable income. But if the competition was like a fish cutting competition, then I'd choose the audience, right? Like, so it depends, if getting to number one on the New York Times meant that I would have a long-term career, then I'd choose that because that's the win that I'm after. So the answer is it depends, and I would pick one or the other depending on what the variables and the context were. So
sure.
I would pick losing if it meant I got a long-term career. I would pick winning if it meant I got the long-term career.
Yeah, all right, that's fair enough. I would be willing to say the competition should mean something to you. It's not like, yeah, a competition you don't care about.
It's a competition that, yeah, but I'd need to know what the outcomes are. Like, because that's how you define the win, right? Mm. I don't care. Like, I will lose any competition if it's not relevant to the goal of what I want, right? And this is where competition gets confused, because there's small C competitive and then there's big C competition. So like, I don't care about every single competition. I don't want to win every single competition. I just want to win the really important ones. So yeah, I would say, depending on the parameters, I would do one or the other. So like, I would answer lose if it meant I got my big goal, or I would answer the other one, not have the significance if it meant I got the win that I wanted. Mm. So whatever the answer is, that means I win that one. Which is the most competition thing I can do. I think you just won that one, Shayna.
He's gonna love that answer. Yeah. All right. Thank you very, very much for joining me today, Sasha. It's been an absolute delight speaking to you.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Sasha. It's always a pleasure to have her on the show. All of those links will be in the show notes at unstoppableauthors.com. Remember, if you want to join us for Sprints and Giggles, just sign up for our newsletter on our website or join our Facebook group, as that's where the link will be shared. If you'd like to go a step further and support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. And please do take a moment to share the podcast online and tag us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search for Unstoppable Authors. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Unstoppable Authors podcast. We'll be back next week with more of our tenacity and worldly wisdom.
Don't forget to visit our website to get the show notes and heaps of helpful blog articles at unstoppableauthors.com.
And join our Guild of Unstoppable Authors, and you will not only hear from us every week, but you will also get a free digital copy of my book, 30 Days of Worldbuilding.
If you enjoyed the episode, please remember to subscribe and leave a review.